Welcome to the Fan Pregame, brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. The Four Nations face-off starts in 2 hours. So we are just among the most excited, I think, here in the building. There's a lot of buzz. We're excited. We're not in Montreal, but I feel like I could just replicate that excitement right now.
I don't know. That's a high bar to clear. There's a lot of excitement around these parts for the Four Nations face-off, and justifiably so. This is the first in a very long time in terms of best on best. And yeah, the fact that we're getting the best from Canada tonight versus Sweden, and we've got an even better matchup Saturday night at the Bell Center. Like, this is just an awesome time. Can't wait for tonight.
We are on for 2 hours. So we got lots to come at you here. Gary Bettman will speak around 6:15 from the Bell Center. We will air that press conference live. So stay with us here on Sportsnet, and we'll get to you. We'll get to Gary Bettman when that happens. He's probably talking about, we think, the future of international hockey, maybe World Cups, and
tell us more, Gary,
and where the Olympics are at. So we're gonna hear from Gary Olympics. Gary Bettman in about 15 minutes. Paul Coffey will join us at 6:30, and he's obviously working with the Edmonton Oilers, but has represented Canada many, many times. Luke Fox will join us from the Bell Center at 7. That will be on the radio only on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and then we will wrap it all up and get you ready for the puck drop at 8 o'clock, which will be here on Sportsnet.
The only downside today is, like, just, you know, a lot of people can watch this across the country, but Toronto weather is a little tough right now, so getting home, don't rush home. You know, record the program, watch it a little bit later. This is definitely one of those events that you would prefer to have live, but may have to settle for it a bit on a slight delay in Toronto.
Yeah, we leaving this building at 7:55, probably will miss some of the hockey game because of the roads.
Yeah.
But that's okay. The winter wilderness is very fitting to Canada, Sweden. Mm-hmm. Tonight. Okay, as we mentioned, a little later on, 8 o'clock, puck drop. There'll be a pregame show here on Sportsnet. What are we looking forward to most? Now we have lines. We have goaltenders. We know who's playing tonight for Canada and Sweden. Like, what's the story of the game for you?
Well, it's got to be Jordan Binnington. I don't know if that's the thing I'm looking forward to most. In fact, if there's something I'm not looking forward to the most, it's probably second-guessing goaltending after the fact. I think that would be the worst thing, because you know how it's gone for Canada if that's really the main driver of the conversation. But I don't know how you don't look at that, at least in terms of, like, what's immediately in front of us, because it's going to be Jordan Binnington versus Filip Gustavsson of Sweden. And Binnington, yeah, there's a lot of conversation around the goaltending piece. Of course, the three best performing goaltenders this year of Canadian heritage are not on the team, and they're going with the guy that they know, or at least the guy that Doug Armstrong knows very, very well, that won a Stanley Cup with Doug Armstrong in 2019. But we are 6 years removed from that Stanley Cup victory, and this year he's got 15 wins and 39 appearances, a sub-900 save rate. This is a guy who has represented Canada before, has played in big games before, has played in a Game 7 on the road. He does have nerve, but does he have the form still? I think that's, like, the one thing we have to find out, because I think in a lot of ways you can correlate, maybe, his performance to the St. Louis Blues performance over the last couple of years, but how much separation is there with that? Because if he's just going to be a 900 goaltender on the best of terms and on the best of days, it just may not be enough to win this tournament. So we shall see.
Yeah, I think the nerve part's interesting, because I think most people thought that probably Aiden Hill should have got the start, but the reason that Binnington is getting the start, and what John Cooper said about it, was that he anticipates this not being a rotation. The net is his to run with until he doesn't run with it. So hopefully, if you're a Canadian fan, you see Jordan Binnington in all three or four games. That means things are going well. But maybe it is that Jordan Binnington characteristically kind of has that edge, right? He's a guy that can play under pressure, maybe thrives under pressure. I remember that one video, that one interview where he's like, do I look nervous? Like, he almost takes this noise, takes this noise around, well, worst goaltending in the tournament. Oh, these are the worst Canadian goalies down the stretch. Like, we have been very critical of these goaltending decisions, rightfully so. And maybe he's the guy that takes that and puts it into a kind of prove-it mentality. He has done that before. That seems to be his personality. I don't know him, but what we know about him is that he's a gamer. And that's kind of what John Cooper talked about as this team's, like, MO, is that they're a bunch of gamers. And that's kind of what we're hoping for, right, is that he has the chip on his shoulder and plays above and beyond what he has this season and find some form to what led him to a Stanley Cup victory.
Yeah, he's been playing a lot of meaningless games for the St. Louis Blues of late. Like, I was trying to do the correlation thing with St. Louis's performance and Jordan Binnington's performance. And like, they won the cup in 2019. They come back in 2020. They're a great team. He has a 912 save percentage. And of course, the world takes a bit of a twist in the spring of 2020. So we can, you know, look at that as a point of demarcation, but doesn't really matter. What matters more, I think, is Alex Pietrangelo leaving after that 2020 season and things kind of happening for St. Louis in a way where they're getting worse year by year. And the numbers and the performance is getting worse, at least from a win standpoint. They have a couple years where they're hanging on, the 15th best record in 2021, ninth best record in 2022. But from there on, it kind of falls off the table. And it matches what Binnington did, aside from the 2023-2024 season. Last season, when Binnington had a 915 save percentage and the Blues had the 16th best record in the NHL, whereas it was bookended by seasons where they've had the 23rd best record in the NHL. So Binnington has kind of matched exactly what the Blues have done for the most part, aside from last year when his performance was better or may have driven some quality team performances. But I think the fact of the matter is this. Last three seasons, St. Louis hasn't had a team worthy of going to the playoffs, hasn't had a team worthy of stringing together big victories. In fact, you'd have to be brilliant. You'd have to be a top-end goaltender to really change the way those seasons were going. So again, I don't know how much you can separate these two things, chicken and the egg. I don't know exactly what it is, but the truth is that Binnington has not played in a while, in 6 years, in big games, and that may or may not be a problem in this tournament.
Oh, so we've got our text line open today at 590-590, and we'll take your thoughts on the Four Nations face-off. Your boldest predictions, this is it. The games start at 8 p.m., so we'll take a chance to read through your messages and see if we can find some of the boldest Four Nations face-off predictions. Maybe it is that Jordan Binnington is the right guy for the job and that he can help Canada win this inaugural tournament. I did see Sportsnet Stats tweeting out that he has a 4.05 goals against average and an 868 save percentage and four career starts at the Bell Center. But don't let that deter you, because maybe that inspires him. So for Four Nations face-off predictions, text us at 590-590. Standard message and data rates apply. As we mentioned, we're on until 8, at least on Sports at 590 The Fan, so we can get to your thoughts and your questions and your answers. Philip Gustafson on the other side also seemed like a surprise.
Yeah, a little bit of a surprise. I mean, Linus Ullmark's definitely the goaltender with the greater pedigree, given that he won a Vezina Trophy. Jacob Markstrom probably was going to be the guy, but got injured, so Philip Gustafson gets the start. And he's not an unknown, but you're seeing less of Philip Gustafson if you're a casual NHL fan, given that he's been splitting carries for the last couple seasons with Marc-Andre Fleury in the Minnesota Wild. But he's got good numbers. In fact, he's a guy who is probably hovering around the periphery. Not the periphery. Everyone's the periphery compared to Connor Hellebuyck, but hovering around, okay, is he a top three, top five, top 10 goaltender in the NHL, at least by statistics that would show that he has been this season. And he does have loads of international experience. So wearing the three crowns won't exactly be a new thing for him, basically at every level, U16, U17, U20, world championships. Philip Gustafson has worn Sweden's colors. So this might not, you know, you're facing Canada in Montreal to start a brand new tournament. There could be some nerves here, but it's not like he's been thrown into a position he's never been in. He's been the backstop for Sweden in big games before, and he gets that opportunity tonight.
Okay, we've got obviously lines to look through. We've got power plays that we know about, and we've got a lot of experience from Canada. Both of us were doing a little bit of prep, obviously, before tonight, and I think the thing that is the most comforting, well, I'm gonna give you two perspectives on this. Canada, I think, has the most pressure in this entire tournament.
Sure.
We are Canada.
Why do you say that?
Because we're the country that claims hockey. We have probably the most talent or history of winning these tournaments. It starts in Canada. It's starting with Canada and Sweden, the very first game. And the tournament is so short that if you get off on the wrong foot, like let's say tonight Canada drops the first game, it's almost like you're playing. It's hard to come back from, and I think Canada will probably.
You need help if you lose.
You
this
need
game.
Some help, and I feel very confident about the Americans. I think a lot of people think that they're the favorite. This might be the first time I remember Canada not being like the hands down favorite when you talk to insiders, you talk to other people that cover the game. So I think Canada's facing the most pressure to win this, but they also have the most experience winning. They have the best like history of proven champions, proven winners, people that have been. In these moments and have been able to capitalize. So I think that works in their favor.
Yeah, experience seems to be almost, not even experience, like accolades is almost the number one requisite to make the Team Canada roster. And we saw, like, there was a lot of discussion clearly going into this announcement with the roster, and a lot of people were upset about certain selections, and we don't need to go through all those, but it seems like there's one real common thread here between the Canadian roster, and that is that they have won. These players have won. 70% of Canada's players who will dress tonight have won the Stanley Cup, 15 overall. And when you compare that to the other nations, Sweden, the opponent tonight, two Stanley Cup champions. Finland has eight, which is an interesting thing. And the United States only has three. So Canada is just full of guys who have won the Stanley Cup. And the guys who haven't, McDavid went to a Stanley Cup final. Brandon Hagel went to a Stanley Cup final with the Tampa Bay Lightning, did not get a part of those back-to-back Stanley Cup winners in 2020 and 2021. The only guys really that are going to play meaningful roles who have not won, Mitch Marner, insert jokes there, Seth Jarvis, who's actually went on some decent runs, Travis Konecny, can't really, nothing really there with Philly lately, and Josh Morrissey. Those are really the only guys who have not had meaningful success. Only one defenseman who will dress tonight has not won a Stanley Cup. Like, these guys are loaded with accolades, and I think that is not a coincidence. I think there's a big part of what Canada wanted to do with their roster is just have guys who have won before and have seen these moments. And again, this moment is a little bit different than those moments, but I think it's going to be valuable for these guys to lean on that experience and the fact that they've done it before.
And they're leaning on the captain, Sidney Crosby, who has done it at every level and has led the team at every level. He's the only player in the IIHF Triple Gold Club to win all three of those legs as a captain. Olympic gold, IIHF World Championship gold, and a Stanley Cup. Like, he is the epitome of leadership, of proven success, of putting your trust in a guy that, yes, he hasn't had the most health in this last 2 weeks. Like, I don't even look past the heart that Sidney Crosby can bring it on the ice to help Canada overcome maybe some of the missteps if they get down early or they haven't found, like, their goal-scoring touch. They have so much experience in this roster. Over 13,000 NHL games, more than 10,000 points, 20 Stanley Cups combined, as you mentioned, 33 individual NHL honors. Like, this is a stacked, stacked team of Canadians that have won or have been around winning or have grown up in the opportunity to wear this jersey. We were going through it before. Only two players have not worn the Team Canada jersey ever in their lifetime. So that's exciting. I mean, it's Devon Taves and Aiden Hill. And, like, just two guys never wearing it, that means that you know what it means to be a Team Canada player. Like, there's so much that goes into it. I just think that experience might be the thing that puts you over the edge in a very short tournament like this.
And just having Sidney Crosby is pretty big in that Sidney Crosby doesn't lose when he wears a Canadian shirt. 25 consecutive wins with him wearing a Canada jersey. 16 consecutive wins, best on best. Have not lost since 2010 opening round game versus the United States. Like, Sidney Crosby sets a different tone, and I don't think that's a coincidence either, because if you're in Sidney Crosby's orbit, if you're a teammate of Sidney Crosby's, all of the sudden, are you not going to provide your absolute best effort? And I think that's a big storyline here for this tournament. It's like, how serious is this? What sort of level are they going to start at? There's a 0 to 60 thing in racing. I don't really know much about racing, but how quickly can you get to 60? Yep. Is Canada just going to be trained to get to that point because they're just in the same room as Sidney Crosby? Like, I could not imagine them not giving or not having their game on to start the game when Sidney Crosby's in your dressing room. I think he sort of exudes that, and I think it's something that can rub off. Whereas with Sweden, it's like, okay, you're clearly the B-side brought into this game. It's in Montreal. It's starting the Four Nations. I think both Finland and Sweden have to be feeling that to a certain extent as throw-ins in this tournament, because it is about Canada and the USA if we're looking at the schedule and looking at what people would want the most.
Every prediction has them in the finals.
So they have to match the Canada level. Mm-hmm. They have to match the Crosby level. And I think on a night like tonight, if the first 10 minutes there is a difference between the two teams, that could be a key in Canada getting the lead and holding on to it like they do in international competitions so routinely.
Just a reminder, we're waiting to get Gary Bettman's press conference, which could be any minute. So we will rapidly throw to that if he does show up on our screens. The other side of the coin, though, I just think of is, I mentioned the pressure that Canada will be under, and all eyes are on Canada, USA to be at the very final game. Sweden kind of gets to come in and just play pretty William Nylander cool guy hockey. Like, mm-hmm. I think, and when we talk to Luke Fox, who's at the Bell Center, I'm really curious to get what his perspective is on these teams that are Finland and Sweden, how they're kind of flying under the radar. I think maybe underappreciated, maybe just like under discussed. Like, Sweden has an amazing defense corps.
Yeah.
Sweden is a really good team, and they might not have as many Stanley Cup winners or gold medalists or Hart Trophy candidates, but they have a lot of really good talent. And that's one thing that I don't think Canada will underestimate, but I do think if Canada's feeling like the pressure of having to win this first game and Sweden just comes in with a top elite talent, like that's where I get a little concerned. This is such a short tournament. You can't really fall behind. So it'll be interesting to see what the mentality is for a Sweden or a Finland who really don't have any pressure on them.
Yeah, pretty much every line in this tournament is impressive, but just like the top six, like you could compare the top six and they're not going to compare to Canada's. But if it's a game where it's, you know, decided in some ways, and we're going to get to Bettman in a second, we'll break down the Sweden and Canada rosters after we hear from Gary Bettman, who's taken the podium with a couple other key figures as well.
Welcome. It's good to see all of you here today. And we couldn't be more excited to begin the Four Nations tournament. Obviously with me is Bill Daly, Marty Walsh, Ron Hainsey. This tournament is the product of collaboration, cooperation, and partnership between the Players Association and the NHL. And most importantly, it was designed so that the players who feel very strongly about representing their countries in best-on-best international competition would have the opportunity to do that again. And the reaction that we're getting from fans all around the world has been sensational. So we're excited to get started. I want to start by thanking Montreal Travel Montreal and Meet Boston for assisting us in putting on this event. Being in Montreal is terrific. Not only is this where the league founded in 1917, but it also has a tradition of international competition, whether it was the first game of the 72 Summit Series or the New Year's Eve game in 75 between Montreal and the Red Army team, and some games of the last World Cup. And being in Boston, who as a franchise just celebrated its centennial, 100 years, and was the first NHL franchise in the United States. So when you piece this all together, and you hear from the players how thrilled they are to get going, we're delighted and we're thrilled that the reality of this Four Nations tournament is finally.
Marty? Yeah, thanks, Commissioner. On behalf of the players, one of the first things the players talked to me about when I took this role as the executive director is international best-on-best competition. And we got to work with the league. As Gary said, we worked very closely together. And be able to put four nations together in a very short period of time. And already it's been a success, and I think moving forward it's just going to be exciting. People are excited about it here in Montreal. People are excited about it in Boston. The fans are going to get an incredible show, both that show up to the games and also on TV around the world. And quite honestly, the players, you've interviewed the players, and I've read it all. You can just tell their excitement by what you've reported. And so it's great for hockey, it's great for fans, it's great for the NHL. It's great for the PA, so we look forward to the next week and a half.
Before we take questions, I have to make one correction on what I said. Tourism Montreal. Thank you.
I should thank Boston and Montreal as well.
We thank Boston. Okay. We're happy to take questions. Is this mic working?
No.
What?
Nothing's working.
Oh, one other thing.
Okay. I remember this person.
That's good. Thank you. We are moving forward with the World Cup 2 years after the Olympics in 2028. We will be asking for bids on hosting games. We will have a package that's just about done that will be available in the next few weeks. and we couldn't be more excited about making a reality Olympics, World Cups on a regular schedule of the best hockey players in the world representing their countries. And we know the full-blown World Cup, of which this is simply a sampler, is going to be sensational. Now we'll take your questions, since we have at least one mic that works.
Steve Wino.
Steve Weiner from the Associated Press. Gary, obviously there's a situation going on with Russia in the war in Ukraine. I'm wondering what kind of the timing you guys need in terms of making a decision on Russian participation in that tournament. And for Marty, what have kind of been your feedback from your constituents, Russian players, about the question of possibly being involved?
I've been very clear in this. The players that we've talked to at Fall Tour now for 2 years in a row, the Russian players want to get back into best-on-best competition. They want to represent their country. They want to play in this tournament. They want to be part of. They want to be part of Four Nations. They want to be part of the Olympics. They certainly would want to play in a World Cup tournament. I'd love to see our Russian players playing in these tournaments again. They're incredible hockey players. The issues are political, and it's not political as far as the NHLPA. It's the world politics that we have to get through. And I'm hoping that as we get closer to the Olympics, as we get closer to the World Cup, we will start seeing Russian athletes back in competition.
And the other half of your question, Russia has a great hockey tradition. We have great Russian players playing in our league. As Marty said, it's not our decision in the first instance. The International Ice Hockey Federation just voted to keep Russia out of competitions, as have many other sports. And we're going to have to see what the International Olympic Committee does. But we have enough time to deal with the realities of what the world situation looks like before then.
Josh, on the left.
Josh Kluber in the Canadian Press. Gary, IIHF isn't part of this. How would this possibly affect the relationship? And will cities in Europe be able to bid on this? And how would that also affect the IIHF's relationship with the NHL?
Cities in Europe will be able to bid. Our intention is to be playing in February of that season. And this is our tournament with our players, and we're cooperating with the federations, but this is an all-NHL tournament right now.
Back over on the right, third row.
Right here, Jonathan Bernier from Le Journal de Montréal. Do you already know what format it will be? You know, in 2016, there were a North American team, European team.
We will be... our anticipation is we'll be using country by country, not melded teams, and there'll be at least 8 teams in the tournament. And again, we have a myriad of decisions that we have to make, which is one of the reasons that in the time frame we had to put this tournament together, this was the best format that was in a position for us to execute it in a first-class way in the time frame that we had.
Right in the middle.
Yes. Marc-Antoine Gollin, Radio-Canada. Gary, my understanding is that the NHL players have yet to sign the agreement to participate in the Olympics next year. Is there a chance that the players might not go to Milan should you go ahead with the plans of a World Cup that would be held in Europe in February, notwithstanding IIHF concerns?
That's a players question. Yeah, I mean, we're going to the Olympics. The players, we're working out an agreement. We've had great meetings with the IIHF, with the IOC, NHL, PA, all of our players. Our players will be there playing. I don't understand where the question comes from, but we're planning on being in this time next year in Italy.
It certainly would be inconsistent with our discussions with the IIHF to this point for that to happen.
And I can't imagine why the IIHF wouldn't want the best players in the world playing in the Olympics or any other international tournament.
Pierre?
Pierre LeBrun, TSN, and the Athletic. Question for both of you. Beyond the 26 Olympics and 30 Olympics and the World Cup sandwiched in between, is the idea finally and permanently to have best-on-best every 2 years, long, long, long term, if possible?
I mean, I think that's our goal. We'd love to see that happen. I just probably won't make it into the press, but I want to give a shout out to the NHL and the PA, our staffs pulling this together, and they've been working extremely hard on an Olympic agreement. They're going to work hard on the World Cup.
So I think if we can get this momentum going, it's going to be great for the game of hockey. It's going to be great for our players. It's going to be great for our fans to do that. So I think ultimately we'd like to, but we'll take one tournament at a time. So let's get two Four Nations and we can talk about the next 30 years after that.
On another level, I think I know why you asked that question. All international competition that we do with NHL players is a joint collaboration and partnership with the Players Association. We now have a partner, since Marty has been at the Players Association, that has put us in a position collectively to execute these types of events and make these decisions for the long term. That hasn't always been the case.
Second row, Chris.
Gary, just a question for you. With it maybe being in Europe and maybe being eight or more teams, how long are you prepared to close the season down in 2028 for this event? And has broadly the attitude or the willingness to do that from owners changed from where it's been in the past?
The most important thing is our regular season, our playoffs, and the Stanley Cup final. We don't want to do anything that will jeopardize the competitive integrity that it all represents. And so among the myriad of decisions we have to make is exactly how long the break needs or should be. That will depend in part where we're going to be hosting games. But obviously, we're not taking a month off. We know how long the Olympic break is. And so we have a sense of what we need to do, whether or not it's 10 days, 12 days, 14 days. We have time to work on that.
The Olympics provide a good model for us with respect to how long that tournament needs to be and with games in Europe.
Harpon, front left.
When you mentioned this is an NHL and NHLPA event and the desire of Russia to be in it, are you willing to go against the IOC or against the IIHF and make your own decision on including Russian players? And to Marty, have you had any opposition to Russian participation from other European players in your membership expressed to you?
No, I mean, the biggest thing we hear is European countries. So it's bigger than hockey, what's going on in Ukraine and Russia. So it's bigger than hockey. So again, we have to see how that plays out. Countries are involved. Countries are concerned about whatever they're concerned about, all the different things around politics there. So that's really that's what I was talking about. Our players, I mean, I haven't heard anybody saying anything on the ice or that they're not going to play. They play with each other on teams today, many different players from different countries. But again, it's bigger than hockey. It's a worldwide issue.
Scott, front.
Scott Burnside, NHLPA. Question for Ron.
I'm sure this will be a great question.
You probably have the best perspective on this. With this format, Olympics, 2 years, World Cup of Hockey on for years and years, how important is that to the players? What does it mean to the playing group?
I mean, I think you've seen the guys here, how thrilled the guys are to be here. Their families are excited to be here. International play, you look to soccer, they have so much international play that gets so much attention, right? We're not soccer as far as a global game, but we're not that far behind, right? And I think that's the long-term goal here, is that this just becomes a part of the game over the long term, where fans, players, everyone can look forward to these guys playing for their countries on a regular basis. And honestly, creating moments like Sid did in 2010 with the golden goal here in Canada that lasts a lifetime. I mean, that's really what we're trying to do here over the long haul. And the players are extremely supportive of it.
All the way in the back on the left.
Hi, Simon Lier-Laurent from La Presse. I guess my question for Marty. You just said a few minutes ago we're going to the Olympic Games. The players are working on an agreement. 1 year ago at the All-Star Game, you said we are going to the Olympics, and still there's no agreement to this day. What has been the hurdle, and what is the issue that is no agreement today?
The agreement's on paper. We haven't signed it yet. I mean, we're still working through it. It's a large agreement. There's no obstacle. There's no real big obstacle. It's just a matter of putting pen to paper and finalizing the dotting the I's and crossing the T's in the agreement.
Eric, all the way over on the right.
Eric Engels with Sportsnet. Just seeing you guys, arm in arm, PA, NHL, putting on this event. Gary, you've characterized this relationship as very healthy. You've managed to put out cap numbers for the next 3 years as projections. How close are you, or how much has your belief that potentially by this summer a new CBA gets signed off on, is the confidence up for both parties here?
I think we are in a good place. in terms of our collective bargaining relationship, in terms of our overall relationship. So I remain more than optimistic that while we have some work to do, we're going to get to where we're going, and people won't even notice that we've done it.
And I've been involved in negotiations for 30 years, one way or another, different contracts, things like that, and from both sides of the table. As mayor, I was the management. As a labor head of the bill and trades, I was the union guy. You know, it's about having communication, keeping communication moving forward, you know, setting parameters around how we want to negotiate. When you look at hockey right now, you think about the excitement that's happening. Last week, the commissioner announced the increased salary cap 3 years in a row. This week, we're doing four nations. We just talked about the World Cup in 2028. We're talking about the Olympics. A lot of great things happening. That's also taken to account to make sure that you keep the momentum moving forward for the game of hockey. Ron talked about, you know, hockey on a worldwide stage. We're not soccer, but we're not far behind, as he just said. So there's a lot of good momentum here. And the last thing you want to do is ruin the momentum. That doesn't mean we're not going to have disagreements. That doesn't mean we're not going to agree with everything in the contract. As long as he agrees with me on everything I want, we'll be fine. But you know, it's about going into it with a positive attitude. Honestly, I feel that way. You look at labor negotiations in North America, around the world, where they go bad is when two sides go in and they're not necessarily on the same page to get agreements on, and that's where it goes bad.
Second row, Frank.
Frank Saravalli, Daily Faceoff. Just for clarity, with the cap numbers that were released last week, was that the first part of negotiating? Have you formally started? Where do things stand?
We haven't formally started yet. That was part of doing the business we need to do on an ongoing basis. I think it was good for the players and good for the teams to get some sense of predictability. Obviously, the numbers are subject to adjustment based on what may be happening in the world's economic climate. But it just is another indication of how well we are working together and how well we are communicating. I know we told you we would start negotiations in February or thereabouts. We'll get started when Marty tells me we're going to get started.
Yeah, and we just finished fall tour, so now we're here. Four nations, we're working with our bargaining unit, so it won't be too much longer.
Brian.
Brian Rashog from TSN. Bill, I think this might be for you. Just some clarity on, and I'm sure you're not anticipating any issues, but if there's anything that comes up supplementary discipline-wise through the course of this event, what's the protocol, and does this potentially bleed over into an NHL season for a player, or what's the plan there?
So our Department of Player Safety is operating over this tournament and overseeing the tournament the same way they do regular season games for all teams and all players. The hearing procedures are the same. It is the anticipation of the parties that there would be no discipline that spilled over into the regular season. So I think our agreement is absent really extraordinary circumstances, that would be the case.
An extraordinary circumstance, like a significant incident of some sort, would be?
Extraordinary circumstances.
Mark, in the middle, third row.
Good evening. Let's talk about money a little bit. The All-Star game in the past, players would receive bonuses. Unless I missed something here, are the players are getting some money this year to be if they win or to be here? How does it work?
There is an appearance fee for the players. There is a prize pool for the winning team, and more importantly, the league has been a great partner in making sure we're able to put on a truly first-class event, not only for the players, where they always want to come back, but for their families, their guests as well. And so it's been a big focus of the Players Association. Rob's out his team, making sure the players have a great experience.
I think the numbers are very reasonable, and it really tells you how much the players want to participate in this tournament.
Can we know about the numbers?
This is for love of country, much more than it is for money, because what they get in terms of an appearance fee and a prize fee pales in comparison to what a normal NHL player gets, and they're giving up vacation time to do this. It tells you how much they love the competition.
My other question is regarding the Canadian currency. We've been talking a lot about it. And at the start of 2024, the Canadian currency was at 75.5. Now it goes around 70 cents. I don't know what... I think it closed around 70 cents today. So what can be done to for the Canadian teams? I mean, obviously, some markets won't be able to support the difference. I'm thinking about Ottawa, Winnipeg, teams in Alberta.
I would caution against tales of doom and gloom. Our system is designed so that all of our teams can be competitive. It's all done in U.S. dollars, so the system takes into account the fluctuation in currency between Canada and the United States, and part of the system includes revenue sharing. One of the first things I do every morning is look at where the Canadian dollar is. So we're very mindful of it, and it'll be addressed as part of the system.
Back, Pierre, in front.
Question for Marty and Gary. Any concern about, you know, not all the games being sold out? I know some are, some aren't, and where the ticket prices are. And just as a more global second question, what are the expectations on revenues for this event and whether there'll be profit?
The first part of your question is we're over 90% sold. We've sold, I think, over 110,000 tickets. And as you know, you've been to enough international competitions. Some games sell out international competitions, and this is in the Olympics, the World Juniors, the World Championships, and some don't. We are going to be substantially full, if not full, in all the games. And so the reaction from that standpoint has been good. I think we'll make collectively a slight profit, but as we've indicated on all of the discussions that we've had and the questions that we've answered, this event isn't about making money. It's about reinstituting best-on-best international competition for our fans and for our players.
Not much more to add there. You know, I talked to the commissioner in the league. We talk on a daily basis about the ticket sales, and you just saw after last weekend the ticket sales just going really high. They mentioned after the Super Bowl, after the AFC Championship and NFC Championship, would have turned to hockey, and that's what's happening right now.
Kevin, over here on the left.
Kevin, Toronto Star, for Gary and for Marty. It was about a year ago in Toronto where you guys both sort of dropped a little bit of bombshells about the state of the Arizona Coyotes and hinting about Utah. I wonder if you can both reflect on the change and what you think of the new situation with the Utah Hockey Club.
You never want to leave a market. We had great fans in Arizona, but I think across the board, this has been an extremely positive move for the game, for the league, for the players, for the team, and to everybody who was involved in doing it, particularly Ryan and Ashley Smith in Utah, having not just the faith in our game to want to do this, but what they managed to accomplish to set up the team in a matter of less than a handful of months was extraordinary.
All right, we're coming back here on the Fan pregame. We're just going to cut
it off with the Arizona
short
questions. I don't know if we need to continue with the Coyotes.
But everything else about that was pretty much focused on the new World Cup of Hockey announcement, which we assumed was going to be part of it. We are going to get Paul Coffey to join us in a few minutes, so we'll keep our recap brief so then we can get to Paul. But World Cup of Hockey is set to return in February of 2028. Featuring best-on-best international competition once again. The bidding process for host cities will begin shortly, which will be interesting, and it can be international as well, so people in Europe, cities in Europe can bid for it. Gary Bettman saying that 8 teams is what he was anticipating.
Could be more.
Could be more, but I just started looking at how many players play for teams because he said NHL players only, which makes this a little difficult because we know Finland basically didn't have enough bodies.
That will
tournament.
Be impossible to do.
Well, it is impossible.
Yeah.
But he said not blended, not Team North America, not Team Europe, not the youth team. So I don't know how you're going to get 8 teams of only NHL players because there's
it's
really
not going to happen.
Not enough.
It's an NHL event, but the NHL is going to have to open its doors to non-NHLers for it to work.
I agree with that. And so the Olympics and the World Cup will rotate every 2 years, starting with the 2026 Olympics coming up, 2028 World Cup of Hockey, 2030 Olympics. You get the the cadence. But obviously Canada, USA, Finland, Sweden, we can imagine there. Didn't turn down the idea of Russia possibly being a part of it, even though IIHF still has to make a decision on their participation.
It feels like Russia will return when the Olympics decides it can return. That's just kind of, I guess, my guess on the matter, or when the IIHF does with World Championships, so on and so forth. So, yeah, we can expect now, and they're very proud of rolling this out, every 2 years, major international event, whether it's not it's going to be the World Cup of Hockey or the Olympics. And what they want to do is fairly sizable with the World Cup of Hockey. At least 8 teams, if you're doing it, if you're opening up bids to Europe, like this is going to be fairly substantial. It's going to take the NHL out of action for at least 2 weeks, I would imagine. So it's a heavy lift. And I think their commitment to international hockey is a very good thing, but they're not cutting corners with it, which makes it even better. And just quickly, the body language, like Marty Walsh and Gary Bettman,
they
the best buds
are best
up there,
friends.
Which is a great thing because they it's are. Been so contentious mm-hmm. and it just seems like everything's cool with both sides. Money, again, solves everything, it seems, and there is money coming into the system. That's why the salary cap's going up. That's why it's all smiles between the two parties up there ahead of the Four Nations face-off.
Yeah, and it's a perfect time to do this. You know, this is kicking off in about an hour and 20 minutes. We'll have the inaugural game of the inaugural Four Nations face-off tournament between Canada and Sweden, and that's the time to let us know how much more international best-on-best we can expect. And, of course, looking forward to the Olympics and the World Cup. I think it's a really good cadence having some. I like the All-Star game, you know, but I think that it's an interesting thing to move away from that fully. You know, I don't see the NBA doing the NBA loves their All-Star this All-Star weekend mm-hmm. coming up. This is kind of a new endeavor that hockey is doing, deciding to take international hockey at the forefront and less of the All-Star festivities, which will make when you do have an All-Star game, which would be every what? With a fit that
it would be every
other
year still.
So it will actually, I feel like, help that feel fresher because it does get to the point where we're like, okay, how many more skits and mm-hmm. how much effort are these guys giving? It might give us a bit of a, hey, this is fresh again. It's been 2 years.
Yeah, I think it could only improve mm-hmm. the All-Star offering if it's not, you know, shoved down your throat year after year after year and not evolving in any way. I mean, it's definitely going to be an off year in terms of intrigue, not having international hockey instead having the All-Star, but we probably can't ask for a 2-week break every single year. Mm-hmm. I think every other year, major international competition is definitely a good thing. Would I prefer something every year? Sure. The All-Star game isn't really the replacement. It's just the thing that's there when the international competition's not being played, it seems.
We'll continue to recap all of that. We're going to be on the air for an extra hour on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and we'll talk to Luke Fox at 7 o'clock from the Bell Center, so we'll get any tidbits. He was definitely at that press conference if we missed anything from Gary Bettman and co. But if you're just tuning in, the World Cup of Hockey will be returning February 2028 and continuing every other year with the Olympics, so getting international hockey back in the mix really is a nice feeling for a lot of hockey fans that are looking forward to tonight kicking off the action. We got Canada and Sweden. It'll be up next on Sportsnet and 8 p.m. puck drop there at the Bell Center. We're going to bring in Paul Coffey in a moment, Hockey Hall of Famer, assistant coach for the Edmonton Oilers. And we'll do our best bets and we'll talk to Luke Fox and we'll break down anything else we missed while we wait. But I think the thing that interests me most about that press conference was trying to figure out which countries will be the ones added in, because there's a lot of, obviously, Germany. Well, you want to see Germany, right? And you probably want to see Slovakia and Czechia and Switzerland. I'm just trying to think about how many players are possible to play for these teams that play in the NHL.
Yeah,
so that addendum is going to happen.
Also, how the countries get there. Like, is there going to be some sort of play-in? How do you decide between Germany and Slovakia?
Maybe they'll just go with, like, whatever your world ranking is.
It may be that, or it may be Leon Draisaitl just won the Hart Trophy.
Well, I think Germany will be.
We got to get Leon Draisaitl in this tournament.
I can't imagine they do this without Germany.
It may, well, if we're going by ranking, I don't know what the ranking is, but I'm sure Czechia, they just won the world championship. They would be ahead. Switzerland might be ahead.
Yeah, we still have lots of spots.
Russia would be ahead. Slovakia?
I'm going to get it for you.
Germany's definitely had a couple good years here, and they
2024 men's world ranking. Canada.
They definitely benefited from the Olympics. Not having the best players the last couple of times through, because Germany actually has done well recently on the Olympic stage. But I don't know if they're guaranteed based on points to get there. And if you're sitting Leon Draisaitl, again, I don't know if the NHL would be cool with that. So I don't know how they're going to decide that. And he said it's going to be at least 8, so maybe it could be 12. Maybe there's a
12.
Play-in.
Justin, there's not even 12 nations represented with enough bodies.
He said at least 8. What, are they going to have 9 and one team is playing in?
I think
if it's at least 8, it's probably the next step would be 12.
So I pulled up a site called Quant Hockey, which is like a stats site. And currently saying that 395 NHL players are Canadian, 270 are American. Then we get to Sweden, 93, Russia, 61, Finland, 51, Czech Republic, 28, Switzerland, 11, Germany, 7, Slovakia, 7, Latvia, 6, Denmark, 6, Belarus, 5.
So this can't be just an NHL event.
It can't be, it's unless you're going to have a team of two Norwegians.
They're going to rely clearly on players from other leagues, and I don't think that's necessarily a terrible thing, but it's like, how far down the line do you want to go? Do you want to ice a German team that is almost exclusively guys who don't play in the NHL? Are you going to tell Leon he's not invited every 4 years?
No.
I don't know how it's going to work, but it's going to certainly blend aspects of the IIHF, and whether or not they kind of get into bed with the, I don't think they will. It'll have to be something that they do on their own, which makes it a little bit more difficult logistically.
Well, whoever plays for the German national team, that team that goes to world championships.
Sure. Again, these are fluid invite things, but
I think that those individuals should be able to play in this tournament.
And I think they will.
Because if not, we're going to have four nations like we are now with basically zero subs for Finland.
We almost had three nations. Yeah,
yeah, that's it. So I looked at the I'm on Wikipedia. I don't know how accurate this is. Top 20 rankings in the IIHF from May 2024. And it's Canada, Russia, Finland, Czech Republic, Switzerland, United States, Sweden, Germany. That's your top eight.
Okay.
That was 2024 of May. Okay, let's shift gears just a little bit here. Paul Coffey, the assistant coach of the Edmonton Oilers and Hockey Hall of Famer and longtime Canadian representative, is going to join us right now. Paul, we appreciate jumping on. I hear you're in Mexico, so this is very, very nice of
we
you to jump on. We're sorry to take you away from the beach. How's it going?
No, that's great. This is great. I'm excited. Excited about the next week and watch some great hockey.
Yes, I'm glad that you could connect with us. Sorry, we were a little late. We were just getting the press conference from Gary Bettman and co. that they're continuing to add more international hockey, best on best. World Cup of Hockey continuing to be a part of the staple moving forward. I just wonder for you, when you see the return of best on best, you're going to see the Canadians getting out there with the Canadian maple leaf on their chest. Like, how does it make you feel? You've been able to represent this country many times at the largest scale. And I wonder if you're feeling nostalgic or excited.
Yeah. I mean, for starters, I guess taking the back seat to Gary Bettman's not a bad thing. But no, it's great. It's great for hockey. The unfortunate part about the next week is there's going to be three great hockey teams that aren't going to win, but that's why we play the game. There can only be one winner, and it's awesome. And myself personally had a chance to represent our country on numerous occasions and, enjoyed immensely every single one of them.
So all the talk ahead of this game for Canada, one might be the goaltending, but two is this power play that features Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, Sam Reinhart, Cale Makar, Nathan MacKinnon. And a lot of people are drawing parallels to the Canada Cup power play that included you, Ray Bourque, Mark Messier, Mario Lemieux, and Wayne Gretzky. Do you think they can match your production, Paul?
Well, I guess as long as you don't tell the other team. let's not discredit the penalty killers on the other side. I mean, those are all great hockey players. But being a successful power play is hard because when you're killing penalties, all you got to do is ice the puck down the ice. And it's not going to be easy for our guys. I'm betting on them, of course. I've got a prediction of 5-2 tonight. And, Crosby and Connor, MacKinnon, of course, Cale Makar. And, it's incredible to watch those guys, Reinhart, Marner. It's incredible. But they've got to come together as a team rather quickly. I think it's important that they don't get overcoached. They just let these kids play, or kids, they're kids to me. I'm in my 60s, and they'll decide what the outcome of the games.
Yeah, how hard is it to come together quickly? I mean, there was some familiarity there, Gretzky, Messier, yourself. And just even beyond the power play, though, this is a short tournament. Your Canada Cup's nine games of some of them. This is going to be a four-game tournament max. Like, it's not, despite all the talent and all the names, that simple, right? Like, it takes a little familiarity, it takes a little getting used to, despite what level of talent is on the ice?
Yes, absolutely. And the unfortunate part is they don't have time to get used to each other. We had we had 2 or 3 week training camp in Montreal prior to those Canada Cups in 84, 87, and 91. And these guys got to come together quickly. But on the other side, they know each other. They know each other's personalities. It's not like it was back then where you didn't talk to the opponents. These guys all talk together now. But I do believe the most important part is, as a coaching staff, do your job, but stay out of the way. Let these players play. Let the players decide what happens on the ice. They're all good. They're all smart. And I firmly believe our guys will get the job done.
We're talking to Paul Coffey, Hockey Hall of Famer, and assistant coach with the Edmonton Oilers. I want to ask about like playing against your teammates, because this is a unique part of this best on best, is that, you know, for example, tonight Marner's going to play McDavid, or Nylander, McDavid's going to play Ekholm, and you might have a little bit of fun leading up to it. We've seen all the social media clips, but when the puck drops, like, how do you set the tone of that seriousness that you do want to, you know, play for the pride of your country and beat the hell out of each other? Like, how do you turn that on when you guys are teammates most months of the year?
Well, I can't comment about Mitch Marner and Matthews and guys and Nylander on different teams, but I can comment on Connor McDavid and Matthias Ekholm, and they're the most fiercest competitors that I've ever been around. Gretzky-like, Lemieux-like back in the day, and they're going to be playing for keeps out there. I mean, nobody's going to be running anybody from behind, but I know Ekholm will take pride in stopping Connor McDavid. I know what Connor's like. He's going to want to beat him.
You mentioned the two-week training camps for your major international competitions. Obviously, they can't do that now, or we'd have these huge breaks. You take the whole month of February off. It wouldn't be bad for those in Mexico, but probably wouldn't work for the NHL. But I wonder what those two-week training camps were like for you. Like, it's 2 weeks rubbing shoulders with the very best of the best. I don't know if it could eclipse, like, the memories of the goals and the wins, but were some of the best times you had playing hockey getting ready for these tournaments?
Yeah, well, a couple of stories. It could happen, but the training camp would have to be in August, and the Canada Cup, if you will, or the Four Nations would have to be in September. But you know, I can remember way back then we beat the Flyers in '85, we beat the Flyers in '87. I saw Rick talking a few times at the bars in Toronto and wouldn't even go near him. Couldn't stand him, just because that's the dislike you had for players back then. I remember seeing him at the airport going to the training camp, and you know, he has no hair now, but he had hair back then, and he cut it right to the wood. So I said, typical smart ass, nice hairdo. He says, I'm going to make this team. I said, kid, I'm going to take more than short hair and make this team. We get to Montreal. Keenan puts us as roommates. The rest is history, and we've been best friends ever since. But I think when you get guys together, these guys will bond. They will, because they're great. They're proud. Unfortunately, they can only do it on the short term, but it kind of is what it is, and it's going to be fun to watch.
Last question for you, Paul. I've clearly, you know, on the Oilers coaching staff, been through the heartbreak of last year's Stanley Cup final and the return this year. What's it been like since? Obviously, it was a bit of a tough start for the Oilers, but they've found their groove again. What are they building towards right now?
Well, there was a point with the Oilers that we were the hunter, we were hunting other teams, and now we're the hunted. I think anytime you have Connor McDavid on your team, wherever the building is, a St. Louis on a Tuesday night or Toronto on Hockey Night in Canada, teams want to beat us. I think hopefully that'll make us better, make us stronger. There's nothing that takes away that feeling we had last year losing Game 7. That will never go away. Even if you're lucky enough to win a cup this year, that'll never go away. I think our guys, you know, I don't know if there's a lesson from that, because, you know, Florida played well. They deserved to win. I thought we didn't play as well as we could, but that's the way it goes. But, you know, apparently we've just got to keep rocking and rolling, get into the playoffs. And then once you get there, there's no guarantee you're going to go anywhere. That first round's going to be hard, second round, etc.
Well, we wish you the best of luck with the rest of the season. Enjoy this little break that you do get to enjoy, and go Canada. We appreciate your time tonight, Paul.
Yes, thank you.
That's Paul Coffey, Hockey Hall of Famer, assistant coach with the Edmonton Oilers, and has been part of one of the best, arguably the best power play ever to be iced by Canada. I was watching some clips of that. Gretzky, Lemieux, Messier, Coffey, and Bourque. Like,
absolutely ridiculous.
I don't know. Canada's is pretty good, but it's pretty hard to top that.
Hard to top that. Very quickly before we get to bets, I got a text from Mike Feuda, who, when we were talking about Germany and how you get in, like who gets in, he said it would be mathematically explained by whichever equation produces Germany, meaning that Germany will be going no matter what.
Yes, I never thought it wouldn't be.
I'm not saying you
They do. Have to be there.
They have to be there.
They have actually some of the most players.
You cook the books to get Leon Draisaitl in Germany there.
Don't you worry. They will be in this. Whatever it is, whenever it is, you got to see them there. All right, quickly, we have 20 seconds, Justin. I got Canada-Sweden over tonight, 6.5. I think goals, 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 first game of the tournament.
I'm just going long-term. Canada's going to win this thing. How many Stanley Cup winners do they have?
Like 55.
They got enough to win this tournament. Canada's going to win. Plus 140. We're playing it. Go Canada.
All right, beautiful. We will take a break. We'll be back on Sportsnet 590 The Fan for the next hour with Luke Fox. That was The Fan pregame brought to you by Botano. The game starts now.